Greetings and welcome to the Net Positive Podcast. This episode features a conversation with my great friend, Peter Rumsey. He's an extraordinary engineer. He's designed lots of LEED Platinum buildings. He's shown how you can reduce energy consumption in buildings by over 50%, often with a negative net marginal cost. Peter is the founder and chief executive officer of Point Energy Innovation. Peter, welcome to the Net Positive Podcast. How are you doing today?
Great. Thank you.
Really, really happy to have you on the show. Born and raised Oakland, California, right?
Correct.
What was your youth like?
Well, you know, I had a relatively good upbringing. I think one of the things that brings me to where I am today is that the architecture of the East Bay is actually quite amazing. Julia Morgan designed several buildings in the East Bay, Bernard Maybeck, and a whole slew of architects that were into organic architecture that was elegant and included biophilia and things like that. So I grew up seeing these kind of buildings. And the other thing that influenced me is I grew up in the 60s when I remember looking across from the East Bay over to San Francisco, and many, many days per year, we had really bad smog. It looked so bad you could barely see San Francisco, and it was this brown thing that was just very disturbing. And as I learned more and more about it, I learned that, you know, that was coming from automobiles and from burning garbage and all these things and power plants, coal-based power plants that were, surrounding the San Francisco Bay Area. And I think it was one of the things that really made me want to, address pollution-related issues and do it through buildings, because I really fell in love with architecture as a kid.
I was going to give you a hard time. When the rest of us were playing, pickup hockey and, baseball, you were checking out architecture in the East Bay. But that led to you going into engineering, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was always a numbers guy. I loved science and math and these kind of things. I had a junior high school, seventh, eighth grade professor or teacher who taught an architectural drafting class. I loved that. We had metal shop and wood shop back in the day. And, I was just enamored with that side of things. And so engineering was sort of a natural progression for me.
Right. And then off to UC Berkeley, right?
Yeah.
Just a few miles away.
You know, I decided, to specialize in renewable energy. Now, this was not long after the different energy crises that we had in the 70s, and everybody was talking about energy back then. And I decided that, I really want to focus in on solar energy and renewables, things like that. And I remember my advisor at Berkeley saying, Peter, this is all just a fad. I really don't want you focusing on this. You need to get back to the basics of engineering and things like that. And I was like, wow, that's like the worst possible advice I could get right now. That's what I said to myself. And this is right around 1980. And I would like to say I was right and he was wrong.
I think you could safely say that. I met you when you were based in Thailand, working for the International Institute for Energy Conservation. You got me to come over there, and we met in the Philippines, and then we went to Bangkok, and that was your experience with IIEC. But was that your earliest experience out of college, or what?
I did work on a variety of different energy issues before that. I spent some time working on sustainable and low-tech projects in Africa. And I worked for an energy consulting firm in California called Zenergy back in the day. And but I'd always wanted to combine my interest in developing countries with energy and sustainability issues. When we were working in Thailand and you came over and worked with us on some of those projects, it was actually at the time, the most significant, important energy efficiency program of any developing country. And that was in Thailand that we helped to facilitate and catalyze by bringing in a lot of specialists and helping them write policies and programs with a special Thai approach to it. And it was really interesting to see that the Thais approached energy efficiency in a very different way than what was going on in Europe or the US at the time. But they really did embrace it. And today they definitely are one of the further along countries, developing countries in the world. And we spent time working in the Philippines, as you mentioned, Malaysia, Singapore, Indonesia, and most all the countries in Southeast Asia.
Amazing, amazing times. How many years were you over there?
Yeah, it's three years living in Bangkok.
3 years. And then I wrote in my notes the supersymmetry years, but, yeah. But along the way you met Eng Lok Lee, who was and still is just an amazing engineer who just turned things upside down. And he was involved with, I think, well, maybe you can tell the story about how he became involved with the Compaq Computer Corporation and Ron Perkins, and you then got into that swirl with those guys.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Lee, Eng Lok Lee, was my mentor. What it was really interesting because he had started to, through just very focused engineering, he was figuring out how to design HVAC systems in a way that used half the energy and doing it in a super cost effective way. And so he had worked with Compaq Computers in Singapore, and this Compaq was later absorbed by HP, but then worked for Compaq Computers in Texas and had started to develop a fairly well-known name for himself in the energy efficiency world. When I first met him, it was when we were doing a project for the Asian Development Bank in Manila, Philippines. And I said, you know, here's a group of bankers, and they've said, if you can find energy efficiency projects on our basically brand new 1 million square foot office building that has a return on investment that, you know, is better than 10%, we'll do it. And so I took on doing the investigation of the lighting systems in the building, and he took on investigating the HVAC systems. And together we identified somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 to 30% energy reductions as a cost-effective retrofits for the building. And all of those were in fact implemented. And that building is still a case study for energy efficiency upgrades. But through that project, I got to understand his technique and started working with him more. Eventually moved to Singapore for a short time and worked with him in Singapore. And then when I returned to the US, set up a supersymmetry office on the West Coast. And this is in the mid 90s. And we started working with a lot of the tech firms that were growing then, Silicon Graphics, Netscape, all the precursors to the names that we know today, like Google and Microsoft and others.
And then I think, you know, you've basically had a number of engineering firms, Integral, Rumsey, now it's Point Energy.
Yeah,
your specialty has been, you know, just really ultra efficient. I think you have something like 17 LEED Platinum buildings you've worked on, and you know, you've really pushed the envelope in your entire career. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I'm actually now close to having worked on 45 LEED Platinum projects, and. You know, what I made a decision in my career, I was offered at one point a policy position at a prominent environmental group working on energy efficiency policy nationally. And you know, I really was torn about, should I take that position where I can help influence policy and make small changes, but to all buildings, or I could go work on designing the most energy efficient buildings possible. And these are buildings that use 50, 60, 70% less energy than the standard designed building. Those buildings can show the way to others for what's possible and help to pave the road for policies that make buildings 5% more efficient seem so mild and modest in comparison to what we're doing. So that's what I did. And my whole career has been focused on designing buildings that really do go beyond and sharing that information with others. A lot of engineers develop certain techniques for better performance and such, and then they want to hold on to them as a competitive advantage. I've never felt that way. I think maybe to a fault, but I've always shared everything I've done with everybody in our buildings community. I did found Rumsey Engineers and grew that to be a prominent green firm. And then that was acquired by a company called Integral Group, who I worked with for several years and did a lot of really exciting work with them. And then in 2014, split off and started a new company called Point Energy Innovations. And that's where I work now. I also started a company called Personal Comfort Systems for a while. We designed chairs that were heated and cooled that would be used in office environments. Unfortunately, we're not able to get the venture capital funding that we were hoping for. So that company did not make it, but there since have been several companies that are now popping up selling office chairs with heating and cooling in them.
It's the coolest idea that you just spot, I guess that's spot conditioning. Instead of heating a whole room and whole office, you're just heating the or cooling the chair.
Yeah.
Peter, I want to, amazing, and I apologize for suggesting you've only worked on only 17 LEED Platinum buildings when the number is more than twice that. But talk about a couple of the most exciting projects. And I hope that you're going to hit on radiant cooling and that technology, yeah. Because I know that's been a big part of, you're so matter of fact, say you can get 50, 60, 70% savings in a building. And what are some examples of that?
Yeah, I think one of the ones that's the most compelling is my work with a company called Emphasis out of India. And over at this point, it was 12 or 13 years ago, I got a call from a guy from India saying, I work for a company called Emphasis, and we'd like your help on making energy efficient buildings. And, you know, I'd never worked in India. And I was like, wait a minute, is this like a spam call or something? And so I was quickly looking up Emphasis. Who is Emphasis? And at the time, I found out quickly as I was Googling them and on the phone that they had 150,000 employees in India, or one of the major tech companies in the country. And so I took the call a little bit more seriously. And next thing you know, a week later, the head of sustainability and one of the key people on the construction team was in my office in Oakland. And they had found my name because at the time, and I still do teach a class at Stanford, I'm an adjunct lecturer there. And what happened was they flew me over to India. I met the founder and at the time, the chairman, and is a man by the name of Mr. Murthy, who's really quite a visionary in India and an entrepreneur. And he said, Peter, look, what I want you to do is I want you to design the next building that we build to be the most energy efficient building in India, if not the world. And so I was like, well, that's perfect. And it was 250,000 square feet. And I had in my mind a lot of clarity about how we go ahead and do that. And so we started to design the building. And sure enough, the folks who were like the team that did building design and construction for Emphasis said, wait a minute, what are you doing? This building design looks so different from what we've been doing. We're not comfortable with it. And sure enough, one of the ways to get a very low energy HVAC system is through radiant heating and cooling. In India, it's just radiant cooling. And they were like, wait a minute, we don't do that here. And so they talked amongst themselves for a few weeks while I was back in the US and came back and said, here's what we're going to do, Peter. We're going to take this next building. We're going to cut it in half And half of it, we're going to do what you say. And then the other half, we're going to do what we'd like to do, or what we're sort of doing as our thinking around the more efficient design. And at first I was disappointed because I said, you know, look, the founder of the company told me, do whatever you want to do. But then I realized, no, this is perfect. This will be the largest side-by-side test of energy efficient building techniques that has ever happened. I think to this day in the world. So there was 125,000 square feet on one side and 125,000 square feet on the other. And basically we did the design. The radiant side used 40% less energy for the cooling systems, and it cost 9% less to build. That building also was designed with excellent daylight, light shelves, efficient lighting, and we were getting overall an 80% reduction from the buildings that they had built a year before that. Emphasis then moved forward that building design. It was a proof of concept like no other, and it completely changed how they thought about buildings. Since that period, the size of the company has doubled up to now 300,000 employees. And this is all pre-COVID numbers. Their energy consumption, in doubling the number of people and doubling office space, their energy consumption basically stayed flat. They've saved over $100 million in energy bills, and last year achieved carbon neutrality.
Peter, that is an amazing story. And the commission that they gave you must have been phenomenal for that $100 million of savings.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it changed everything. And now Mr. Murthy, again, he's like a rock star. He's sort of like a Bill Gates of India. You know, I'll bump into him at the airport and things like that. Or he's retired now, but he has me come over to his private office and we hang out and talk about things. It's quite an exciting thing. He's quite a visionary. And I really do think that he does is owed a lot more credit than what he gets.
Talk now about Point Energy Innovations and your focus on decarbonization of buildings. And, you know, you wanted to talk a little bit about trends, and we'll do that a little bit in the end as well. But certainly building decarbonization is a massive trend here in California, and I guess around the country, and will be around the world.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When we started this firm, it's about 8 years ago, we set out to just focus on green buildings and advanced green buildings, and to especially focus in this iteration of my consulting career on working with developers. And developers are very budget focused. And if we can't make these high performance green buildings work with developers, we're just never going to get there. So, you know, we've learned a lot about how to make these high performance buildings cost effective. And basically, for the last 5 or 6 years, our firm has not designed a building that has natural gas in it. Every single building that we're designing, and we're working around the country and a little bit internationally, every single building is an all-electric building. And what we're doing with our clients is those all-electric buildings will have some on-site solar PV, and then the rest of the electricity consumed by the building will be provided by renewable sources. And so, you know, that's an operational decarbonization. And I think the pathway to get there is relatively clear, and it's being understood around the country more and more, not just in California. I think New York is now taking the lead. Several cities there are saying all new construction has to be in the whole state, or a whole city needs to be all electric. And we're going to be pushing to get our electric grid to be decarbonized. So we're seeing this take off around the country. And as you know, our grid has been improving significantly from a carbon perspective. Over the last couple years, 70 to 80% of all new additions to the grid have been renewables, right? So we're not adding new coal power plants. In fact, those have been closing down a lot, and we're not adding new natural gas power plants.
Let's just break it down a little bit. Like, if you, to decarbonize, like, let's just say a building, high-rise building in Manhattan or wherever, Los Angeles or San Francisco. Yeah. I mean, where's the carbon? The carbon is primarily in the heating system, right?
Yeah, so when we talk about decarbonization, there are two elements to carbon that's related to buildings. One is the operational carbon, and that's carbon that's emitted through running the building, and it's mostly related to consuming energy at the building. And then there's embodied carbon, which is the carbon that is the emissions that are created when we make building materials and we transport them to the site. So on the operational side, we've got the two sources. One is burning natural gas at a building, methane, and it releases CO2. Also, the hidden thing about natural gas is the around 2% of leakage when we're extracting natural gas, methane, and transporting it, mostly extracting it. That 2% or so leakage, because methane is such a powerful greenhouse gas, almost doubles the impact of using natural gas in a building. So that's a big part of carbon emissions of buildings. The other big part is the electricity consumption when you're consuming electricity that's generated by coal or natural gas or other fossil fuels. And then, you know, the embodied carbon is something that, you know, we're working on a wide variety of buildings where the design is specifically focusing on trying to find building materials that have less embodied carbon and in fact sequester carbon. And so we're doing commercial office buildings with wood structures or called mass timber. And it's gaining a lot of attention right now, especially in green building community. Can we build large buildings with wood? And it's low carbon to create it, but it also sequesters, it holds carbon in the structure of the building.
Been teaching at Stanford for over a dozen years. And I know you're proud of this project that you've got going there. I think Stanford Building Decarbonization Learning Center. Did I get that right?
Yeah, our learning accelerator, what we call the Stanford BDLA, is a project that I've started with some other colleagues from Stanford. And what we're doing is we're making teaching material around building decarbonization available to professors at colleges and universities around the country. And we're the first year, it's just an 8-month-old project. The first year that we are doing this, we're focusing on collaboration with historically Black colleges and universities, HBCUs. And in fact, we helped Howard University create the nation's first architectural class wholly devoted to building decarbonization. And that class occurred last year and has transformed the thinking of several architectural students. They were super excited about it. So we're working a variety with HBCUs, but the word is now getting out and colleges and universities around the country are starting to go to our website, download this free teaching material and tools and start to engage. And we even have a wide variety of users from the private sector going there so that they're using this material for internal training of their architects and engineers and construction management folks.
What trends, I mean, now you've been doing this for what, 35 years, 36 years, something like that, like me. What are the big trends? I mean, we've talked about going from just low and ultra efficient buildings, but now it is big focus on decarbonization. What are the other big trends that are affecting your sphere of influence?
Yeah, you know, I think, Ted, this is a very pivotal time. And the word, the energy transition, is now what people are talking about. And, you know, we were in the 80s and 90s saying, can we just prove to the rest of the world that we can make buildings lower energy? I mean, it was just that in and of itself was quite a task. And now we've been able to prove that. We've been able to prove that solar energy works. Not only that, we've been able to see the cost of solar energy and wind-generated electricity to drop dramatically. What we're going to see over the next 50 years is basically the transformation of the biggest machine that humans have ever built, the electric grid in our energy system. If you think about it, the western part of the U.S., I'm connected through copper wires in my house to your house in Southern California, to somebody's house in Denver, Colorado. It's phenomenal. So that whole system that we've created is going to be transitioned over to a zero carbon grid. And we're going to be building buildings that are significantly more efficient and all electric. And I'm not just saying like that's a policy thing. It is happening naturally. The cost of solar and wind, as I mentioned, is cheaper. So they're starting to take over the grid. Now, they do have societal benefits. So I think the, you know, policies are helping to accelerate that adoption. But the fact of the matter is there's no other option. You know, fossil fuels will run out. And what we're finding is we won't use them all and then run out. What's going to happen is these alternatives, solar and wind, are going to be cheaper than the fossil fuels. So we're going to transition before we run out. And then things like LED lighting, it's a better type of lighting, and it's 80 or 90% more efficient than the lighting that we're using just 20 years ago or 10, 15 years ago. LED lights are globally going to allow us to shut down close to 200 power plants. But there's a lot of other things that are naturally happening, low emissivity windows, variable speed drives. There's certain technology that now is just a natural and is going into all buildings. And not just in the US, when I was working in India, they were doing LED lighting. In fact, they were getting some of the best LED lighting in the world because this construction market there is bigger than here. But they were doing low emissivity windows, variable speed drives, all those things were available in India. So this transition is what we're going to see. And it's going to be, you know, part of it could be labeled decarbonization. But I think it's quite exciting. And I think like maybe a bellwether on that is what's going on with electric cars. Electric cars are now, they're still a small part of the market, but they're the fastest growing sector of the car market. And Tesla is the most valuable car company on the planet. So that's what's going to happen on the building sector and industrial sectors. We're going to see this huge transformation. It's quite exciting. Unfortunately, Ted, I think you and I won't see the completion of this transition because I think it's going to take about 50 years. But the young folks that I work with, I tell them, get ready. You're going to have so much fun and you're going to be an integral part of making this all happen. And they get really excited and jazzed up about that.
That is extremely well put. And I must say, it's just in our career, in our so far, what we've seen has been incredibly gratifying. When we started out, we were fighting the nuclear movement. We were fighting the hard path. We both got attracted to the thinkings of Amory Lovins, the soft path, the road not taken. Well, guess what? The road has been taken.
Yeah.
You know, and the LEDs, the controls, the advanced motors, the advanced air conditioning, the heat pumps. I mean, the pace of technological innovation is just thrilling. So
yeah.
So great stuff. Peter, you've made huge contributions, and you know I'm very impressed by that and proud of you for that. And I always ask at the end of the podcast, I always ask, you know, what do you do to take care of yourself? What do you do to maintain balance in life? Because I think we all realize that in order to be effective, we've got to be balanced.
Yeah. Well, you know, I will say that one of the probably the most important things for me is to find a job that I'm very passionate about and that I love. Because, you know, I was talking to a couple of people on my team the other day. We were on a Zoom and I said, you know, it was first thing in the morning. I'm really looking forward to today. And so that to me, and it's not that every single moment of the day is super, super fun, but generally speaking, I feel so good about what I do. It gives me such motivation and energy that, you know, when my day is over or when my week is over, I'm not feeling like I need some deep recovery. I'm feeling like, great, that was a great week. But of course, you know, my friends and family are really important to me, and I love getting out and getting exercise. I'm very lucky to live here in California, where we can basically recreate, so to speak, year round. And one of my passions more recently has been sailing. And I quite enjoy that, San Francisco Bay being one of the best places in the country to go sailing. So,
well, again, thank you for being part of the Net Positive. Carry on, take your vitamins, carry on, and talk to you real soon.
Thank you so much, Ted.
Bye, Peter. That's it. Thanks for tuning in to this edition of the Net Positive. We'll see you next time.